seat. I have one announcement before we begin, and that is you can pick up one of these flyers on the table. We're having a day of prayer on Saturday, October 28th. If you have never spent a day in prayer, this is the day you need to come. If you spend a lot of days in prayer, this is the day that you need to come. It may sound a little overwhelming and scary to some who maybe haven't done that, but this is going to be an extremely fruitful day, because any time we pray, God hears our prayers, and then he begins to answer them. And this is a day, you're not just going to sit in one seat with your eyes closed all day, because we know what would happen if any of us did that, right? We would probably fall asleep and whatever else. But it's going to be interactive. We're going to move around, and not that we're doing weird things, but we will move from one place to the other, and there'll be a time where we are quiet before the Lord. There's going to be a time where we're praying together for the needs of the fellowship. There's going to be a time set aside for each of us just to kind of go on our own and pray. You know those prayer lists that we keep at home, praying for our loved ones and family and friends and issues and things that we never seem to get through all of them? Well, that's the day you bring that list and you have that time. I have that time, you have that time to sit and pray for those things. And then we come back together and pray for one another. All the information is on the back of the flyer. Lunch, we're going to eat lunch, so you can buy a lunch ticket, you can bring your lunch, or you can fast if you would like. You probably won't have time to run and get something. But anyway, I encourage you, please pray about coming to this. You will not regret it. It's just going to be very fruitful and fun. Okay, here we go. Life lesson. It has been said that the last person to recognize pride in their life is the person with the pride. And that is the truth. Because other people see pride in our lives much quicker than we see it in our own life, because pride blinds. C.S. Lewis said, "Pride is a spiritual cancer. It eats up the very possibility of love or contentment or even common sense." Pride or proud or haughty, those words are referred to in the Bible 111 times. When God says something once, it's very important to listen. When he repeats it, it's very important to listen. When he says it 111 times, we really need to take heed to what he says. Now, I know that pride is not a perky subject, okay? If you knew what we were teaching on tonight, you probably wouldn't have ran here to save your seat, right? But it is a life lesson, and it's a life lesson that each one of us learns and really needs to learn. So throughout our Christian walks, we learn about pride. We're convicted of pride, and we certainly see it in other people's lives. Now, most of the time, we learn about pride slowly, kind of incrementally, but then there are times in our lives where the Lord does that thing, and the life lesson, and he shows us very clearly an area or areas of pride in our lives. This is one of my life lessons. This is a very good and a very important life lesson. I thought I would start with this one since it's the easiest one. Ha ha. But I start with this because everything trickles back to pride in our lives. So we all know what pride is, right? But we're going to define it anyway. I liked this first definition. It made me laugh. Probably in an arrogant way, but an irrationally corrupt sense of one's personal value, status, or accomplishments. I would say so. Irrationally corrupt. Yes. Having or displaying excessive self-esteem, conceit, overconfidence, arrogance. These are all just dictionary definitions. Arrogance, haughty, pompous, big-headed, egotistical, smug, vain, self-dominating, on and on, right? God created mankind in the beginning with a free will. He gave us freedom of choice. God is love. He deserves to be worshipped, but he didn't want to create mankind with a forced worship. He gave us a choice to follow him and to worship him. And before he created mankind, he created angels, the heavenly beings. He also gave them a free will, free choice. Now, think of heaven in the beginning, before mankind. All the angelic beings in heaven, they know no sin. We are born into a corrupt world. We're born into a sinful world. We're born with a sinful nature. Here we have the heavenly host who knew no sin. They knew nothing but the glory of heaven. Can you imagine the sights, the sounds, the splendor, the colors, the worship, nothing but God and the throne of grace. But Lucifer, one of God's beautifully created angelic beings, used his freedom of choice to rebel against God. If you turn to Isaiah 14, we want to read that account. Isaiah 14, or you can just listen, beginning in verse 12. How you are fallen from heaven, O Lucifer, son of the morning. How you are cut down to the ground, you who weakened the nations. For you have said in your heart, I will ascend into heaven. I will exalt my throne above the stars of God. I will also sit on the mount of the congregation on the farthest sides of the north. I will ascend above the heights of the clouds. I will be like the Most High. Yet you shall be brought down to Sheol, to the lowest depths of the pit. Those who see you will gaze at you and consider you, saying, is this the man who made the earth tremble, who shook kingdoms, who made the world as wilderness and destroyed its cities, who did not open the house of his prisoners? So here's Lucifer, this created being who could not take credit for one thing because everything he had, everything he was given to him by God. And yet, in his free will, his heart was lifted up in pride. He had selfish ambition, envy. He's envious of God, envious of his power and of his control. I want that. Why does he get to have that? I want that. His self-importance. Well, I want that attention. I want that worship. I deserve that. His heart was lifted up. It's called pride. Pride was the first sin, and pride is the origin of all sin. Roy Hessen, the author of The Calvary Road, excellent book, he wrote, every sin we ever commit is the result of the hard, unbroken self taking up some attitude of pride. Every sin can be traced back to pride. I, me, my. Any bad attitude, any sin, any selfish anything is all traced back to pride within my heart or within yours. Pride can be referred to in many different ways. I mean, we defined it, but it can be also referred to in different ways. In the Bible, when God speaks of the children of Israel and he says to them, you are stiff-necked, it's just another way of saying you are proud, because a stiff-necked person stiffens their neck, rebels, self-will, wants to go their own way, independence, leaning to their own understanding, can also be referred to as our self-nature, or in Romans it calls that the old man, that sinful man that we are created with. Galatians talks about the works of the flesh, or any self-righteousness. It's all pride. Fenelon, who was in the late 1600s, like a spiritual advisor and leader of some sort, and he wrote a lot, excellent books to get, and they've kind of modernized the language so we can digest it better. But his books are very good. He calls pride self-love, me first, self-protective, selfish, self-anything. When we've got our eyes on ourselves, just as Lucifer did, it's pride. So I want to look at a few ways that pride manifests itself. Now, some are very obvious, right? There are some kinds of pride that you spot right away. And then there are some not so obvious that maybe we don't even consider pride, but when you really think about it and trace it back, it goes back to pride. Peter, his big humbling is a really good example, and it's kind of an obvious one. Before Jesus went to the cross, Jesus spoke to the disciples, and he told all of them, you're going to deny me. You're going to deny me. What did Peter do? I won't deny you. They may deny you, but I would never. How could I do such a thing? I'm stronger than them, right? And we know what happened. He denied him three times. He couldn't believe it. How could I do that? And yet, he did. And I mean, he was crushed, he was broken, he was repentant, but he was lifted up in pride. 1 Corinthians 10:12 says, let him who thinks he stands take heed lest he fall. So that's an easy one to identify when you, me, or other people say, oh, I wouldn't do that. They might do that, but I wouldn't do that. Ah, pride, pride. We can recognize pride when it's haughty, when it's cocky, when it's arrogant, when there's a little strut or a little tone or a little whatever. That's pretty easy to identify, not in ourselves, but in certainly in other people. Proverbs 16:18, pride goes before destruction and a haughty spirit before a fall. I have a very funny story that I can share because our friend shares it. It's about a friend of ours. And when we were brand new Christians and we met him, he was the worship leader, great sense of humor, great guy, loved the Lord, very anointed as a worship leader. And he tells the story that one night as he, you know, finished leading worship, it was one of those worship times, you know how once in a while it's just like, everybody in the room feels the presence of God. You just know you met with him, and you know, it's just one of those times, and he got done and he was thinking, that was pretty good worship. And he went to put his guitar down and he fell off his stool. Now, for the rest of us, we just saw him fall off his stool. He knew what he was thinking. And then he tells the story. So, but you know, he's a little puffed up. So pride, that haughty spirit comes before a fall. Samson is another Bible example. He thought he was above the rules. They didn't apply to him. He didn't take his calling or his abilities that God had given him seriously. And he played with them. And he finally crossed the line. God let him go on and go on and go on and go on. And then he went one step, and God didn't let him get away with it. But he didn't know it. So he got up as he did before, and I will go out and conquer or whatever. And in Judges 16:20, it said, but he did not know that the Lord had departed from him. That's awesome. In the true sense of the word, it's like your jaw drops. He didn't know that the anointing was off his life. He didn't know that. No, he was so caught up in himself and his own self-importance and his own abilities and his own strength, he didn't know God's spirit had left him. Thinking that we are too good to do a certain task, maybe we're above that, that's pride. Naaman is a good example, too, in the Bible, where Naaman was an Assyrian leader, and he had leprosy, and he came to Israel to get healed by either Elijah or Elisha. I don't know which one, because I was going to look it up, and then I forgot. So he came, and Elijah or Elisha said, go dip in the Jordan 7 times. Oh, he was furious. Do you know how important I am? And you're going to tell me just to go dip in your river? I could have dipped in our river. Our rivers are better than your rivers. At least you could have told me to climb the highest mountain and conquer the dragon or do something. But, you know, I'm going to dip, you know, and it was his pride. It hurt his pride. And then somebody kind of pointed that out to him, and he said, okay, fine, I'll go dip in the Jordan. And he did, and he was cleansed. But sometimes when we think we're too good to do something, that's pride. Any kind of judging, being critical, or self-righteousness, because you're self-righteous if you judge, and you're self-righteous if you're critical, it's all mixed in there, and it's all pride. Now, I thought about Job's friends in this. Job was a righteous man, and Job had some friends. And when Job's trials came upon him and he lost everything and was sitting there in pain and in mourning, his friends who knew Job's proven character threw that out the window and made their own story up. They judged him. They figured, well, he wasn't as good as we thought he was because this wouldn't have come upon him. Any kind of judging. I won't ask for a show of hands for those people who have never judged another person or who's never criticized somebody, because we all do it. It's disgusting. It really is. But we all do it. And unfortunately, Christians really are good at it. And it shouldn't be. When we judge what others shouldn't do or what they should do, it's pride. Having a judgmental spirit toward those who don't make the same choices as you do is pride, whether that be in dress, what they wear, how much makeup they wear, any kind of beauty treatments or enhancements. How about schooling or raising your children or entertainment standards? All those things, you know, you've had your own thoughts, you've had your own critiques and judges, just like, or judging, just like I have. Making excuses for, or worse, covering our sin or our failures. David tried to cover his with Bathsheba, and then he ended up making it worse by murdering her husband, because you don't want to admit, you don't want to take the consequence of your sin, you don't want anybody to know, so we cover it over. That's pride, making an excuse, having that victim mentality is pride. appearing more spiritual than you really are is pride. In the New Testament, in the book of Acts, Ananias and Sapphira, they were deceptive in they sold their property and they came and laid their money down at the apostles' feet, giving the appearance that they're laying all of it down, but they kept some out. They had a right to keep some out, but see, everybody else was giving it all. They didn't want to give it all, but they wanted people to think they were giving it all, so they came in with the attitude of, we're giving it all. That's called hypocrisy. It's deceptive. It's lying. And it's pride. It's pride. If we're hard or unyielding, even in small things with people, that's pride. If we're unwilling to submit to authority, it's pride, and that includes, if you're married, not submitting to your husband. It's pride. If we are resentful or unforgiving, it's pride. If we are self-defensive, it's pride. If we're overly sensitive, easily hurt, or think that it's being pointed at us, they're talking about us, or whatever, in that regard, that's pride. If we're unable to receive constructive criticism, it's pride. If we make decisions on our own without consulting the Lord and asking, what do you want me to do? It's pride. Going our own way, it's pride. If we rely on ourselves, we're so independent that we're not leaning on the Lord, it's pride. Disregarding the advice from others is pride, assuming we already know. Now that begins, sorry girls, but it begins in your early teens when you already know. I used to tell my girls, well, we'll get rid of the encyclopedias now because you already know everything. I'm just the mother. What do I know? But it's part of your life. We've all been there. You got to outgrow it. And that's the problem. Many people don't outgrow that. We already know. Why do we assume we know everything? Why don't we read manuals? We already know, right? Instructions. We already know. Have you ever witnessed anybody or you yourself do that? Put something together without, because you already know. Doesn't go well. It's pride. Why is it that we don't seek to increase our knowledge and understanding on something? We'll give an answer before we know anything, but we are think we know. It's pride. Proverbs 15:12 in the Good News Translation says, conceited people do not like to be corrected. They never ask for advice from those who are wiser. Well, that's a stinger right there, isn't it? Okay. Not asking for help when you need help is pride. Oh, no, no, I don't want to bother them. Really? Maybe. I don't know. Unwillingness to change. Well, that's just the way that I am, and I'm too old to change now. That's pride. Self-indulgence. Talking about yourself or boasting about yourself is pride. Thinking about yourself too much. Condemnation is pride, because condemnation says, I should have done better. I could have done better. Because I think more highly, as Romans says, you ought not think too more highly than yourself as you should. Being envious, covetous, being angry, irritable, impatience, pride. See how everything goes back to pride? And you know, we might think, well, no, I don't like this message. Oh, is my phone ringing? I think I'll leave now. I don't like this message either. Luke 18. Verse 10, Jesus tells a story. Two men went up to the temple to pray, one a Pharisee and the other a tax collector. The Pharisee stood and prayed thus with himself, God, I thank you that I am not like other men, extortioners, unjust, adulterers, or even as this tax collector. I fast twice a week. I give tithes of all that I possess. And the tax collector, standing afar off, would not so much as raise his eyes to heaven, but he beat his breast, saying, God, be merciful to me, a sinner. Jesus said, I tell you, this man went down to his house justified rather than the other. For everyone who exalts himself will be abased, and he who humbles himself will be exalted. Once again, Roy Hessen from the Calvary Road said, we have all become so used to condemning the proud, self-righteous attitude of the Pharisee in this parable that we can hardly believe that the picture of him there is meant to apply to us, which only shows how much we are really like him. And isn't that the truth? Because, you know, as I read that, you're like, yeah, you, what a creep. That guy, he just thinks he's all this and that. I'm like the other guy. Guess what? Pride's in all of our hearts. In fact, as we've been listening to all this and listening to the descriptions and how pride manifests itself, maybe one or two of us could have thought about someone we know who is like that, those proud people, you know. We might have run into them or maybe even wished, well, I wish so-and-so would have come tonight to hear this. Or maybe I'll just leave the CD around so somebody in my house can listen to it, right? We are very quick to spot our sin or the sin of pride in another person's life. And it always, always looks so much worse on them. We notice who we identify with. You know, cops notice cops when they're off duty. They just, I don't know how they know, but they just know that that's another cop. Probably a Marine can be in a crowd. He would know another Marine. You just know whoever you identify with. Drug addicts spot drug addicts very easily. And a con man can spot a con man way faster than the rest of us. Fenelon said, nothing is so offensive to a haughty, conceited heart as the sight of another one. And that is the truth. So if that has ever happened to you, where you have noticed pride and maybe a certain kind in somebody else's life, it's time to stop and think, ooh, why is that so offensive to me? Jeremiah 17:9 says, the heart is deceitful above all things and desperately wicked. Who can know it? Pride does blind. In that little tiny book of Obadiah, it only has one chapter and very few verses, but in verse 3, in God speaking judgment against the Edomites, he says, the pride of your heart has deceived you. Pride blinds. It's the pride of our heart that deceives us. Tim Keller said, pride is the carbon monoxide of sin. It silently and slowly kills you without you even knowing it. And do you know what's really, really terrible about pride? Is that God hates it. Proverbs 6:16-19. These six things the Lord hates. Yes, seven are an abomination to him. A proud look, a lying tongue, hands that shed innocent blood, a heart that devises wicked plans, feet that are swift in running to evil, a false witness who speaks lies, and one who sows discord among the brethren. All of those are pride, and God hates them. He warns us, commands us in his word. 1 Peter 5, be clothed with humility, for God resists the proud, but he gives grace to the humble. Therefore, humble yourself under the mighty hand of God that he may exalt you in due time. James 4, God resists the proud, but gives grace to the humble. Humble yourself in the sight of the Lord, and he will lift you up. We would do well to listen to anyone who tells us they see pride in our lives. We would do well to ask the Lord to show us any pride that is in our lives. And we would do well to humble ourselves every single day before the Lord, before he humbles us in front of other people. So, I'm going to take a drink before I tell you my story. And again, I want to remind you, these are life lessons. So this message isn't to pound anybody, although I know you need it, because we all need it. So that's not the purpose. The purpose is to tell you what the Bible says about it, and then for me, or whoever is going to share their story and how God taught them these important lessons. So, before I get into the pride, let me preface kind of all of the teachings this year, just once again, as I did a few weeks ago. Because as you share, sometimes things involve other people in our lives, or different whatever. And so I don't want to blame anybody. I don't want to point anything out of anything. But there are a lot of reasons, well, a couple of main reasons, why we are the way that we are as people. Now, one of them is, and that's the biggie, we were born with a sin nature. So we all are born in sin. So all of us have to deal with sin. There's also genetics, DNA, family traits involved in all of our lives. We all come from different backgrounds, different gene pools, different combinations of people throughout the years that get in our gene pool. We're also who we are because of our environment, the way we were raised, the household we came in, the influences in our lives, learned behavior, all of that. But in Christ, we are not victims to any of it. We live in a time where everybody plays the victim card. It's just like the natural thing to do. In fact, I heard a song. It's a secular song, and I think the chorus is, "Look what you made me do. Look what you made me do." Like, what? Okay, now we got to sing a song about being a victim. You know, it's nuts. But we are not victims. We take responsibility. We don't blame other people. So some of us in our backgrounds, in our families, I mean, we can come from like a hardworking line of people. It's just kind of in the DNA. We're all, you know, real hardworking, or just kind of regular, really good people. People that help one another in need, or go-getters, or, you know, those who are like entrepreneurs. They're just like always, you know, trying this thing and trying that thing. You see it in families. It's not everybody in the family, but it's really can run strong in some families. Or some families just have more of a good disposition. They all wake up on the right side of the bed. It's just they have great sense of humors, that kind of a thing. And then there's the grouchy families. Everybody's something's always wrong, and they're critical, and they're negative, and they're analytical, or they're clueless, or they're self-righteous, or they're enablers. And it just kind of gets spread out in the family. They're enablers, or they're manipulators, or they're con men, or they're abusive, or they're highly educated or career-oriented, or they make really great decisions, or they're just simple people. They have no airs. You just kind of like to be around them. Or they're very extravagant. When they have a party, they have a party. I mean, these people just go all out. Or there's lazy families, or emotionally unstable families, or mentally ill that's in the gene pool. Or they're selfish, or they're gossips, or they're codependents, or criminals, or addicts, or whatever it might be. Now, we all know our families, right? And so we tend to take credit for all the good traits. Forget the family. This is me, right? But when there's something wrong, now we blame the family. It's the parents, it's the grandparents, it's the great uncle, the horse thief, or, you know, I mean, something. So when any of us share, we're not victims. We're not coming across as being victims. I don't naturally go that way, although, boy, is it in me, because I like to blame people. You know, who are you going to blame? You're going to blame Damien. He did it. Well, I agree that there you must have did it. You know, I mean, you know, come on. Or it's the kids or the whoever. You know, we always want to blame somebody because we wouldn't have done that. So it's in there. But I do take responsibility. Does your DNA and your genetic gene pool, does it affect you? Absolutely. Does mine affect me? Absolutely. You know, I see it. You see it too, right? In your family. Do your early formative years affect you? Even today, do they affect you? Yeah, they affect me too. All the things you've been through, all the trials, all that, has that affected you? Of course it has. Have everything I've been through affected me? Yes. What about your current circumstances? Did they affect you? Yeah. Do mine? Yeah, every day. Every day they affect me. But I am not a victim. And I don't blame anyone for how I am. And I don't blame God at all for allowing me to go through things that I've gone through. I don't think he put me through anything. I don't think he made me this crummy way or this or whatever. You know, I don't. And I'm sure most of you don't either. You don't play the victim card. So if I mention anyone, I'm not pointing a finger. Well, let me tell you about my family. We have pride in all of our families, right? Because pride is in all of us. And we have two sides of our families. We have our mother's side and we have our father's side. It's in both sides, but in one side, pride is there, big time. You don't know it when you're growing up because it's just a way that everybody is. And you learn this and it's inside of you too. They are very strong people, very independent. They don't need help. They will push through anything. Very, very high pain threshold. You just go do it anyway kind of people. They're stoic. They have fortitude and strength and willpower and determination. And that's just the way that it is. And you're not, you're not even caught. They're not. You're not conscious of it. It's just the way that it is. So you just push through. You just do things like that. You're not even consciously thinking, oh, I'm better because I'm going to push through. You just do it because that's the option. There's no other option. You know, I have a headache all the time. My headache gets to be about like a number 7. That's when I start to think about, gee, maybe I should take something for that. It never enters my mind. It just doesn't. You just put, and then my, well, I won't say who it is, because then you'll know what side of my family. Okay. So you come to know the Lord, and boy, does he have a lot of work that you don't even know, because you're so wonderful. So how? Why would you think he had work? But you know, you learn, and he shows you things, and that kind of a thing. And I realized, you know, there are people in life who have platters. And their platter is full. They carry a full load. They can do a lot. They're busy, but those are the people who you give something to and it'll get done because they can handle a lot of things. That's one side of my family. And there are other people who they have a saucer. That's all they can do. They can't handle anything. And sometimes that saucer's a lot for them. And so, you know, I knew that, and as I grew in the Lord and everything, you know it more because you learn more about people and you observe and you know, all of that, and I know that. And I know that I can't put my platter on somebody else's saucer. I know that. But at the same time, I thought, if they only chose to have a platter, you know, it still didn't click. Why? Because it's pride. Because it's pride. Because everybody should have a platter, right? Because when you're in pride, you think everybody should be like you. Because you're so wonderful, and why don't people listen to you? This world would be a much better place if they only listened to me and did what I said. Now, I've shared many times, and you're probably getting sick of it, but it's a big deal to me. My years that I struggled with my thyroid thing that was not diagnosed or taken care of, and I call it my coma years because I felt like I was in a coma. And it was about an 8-year period until I got help. 5 years were really bad. Even in that, I pushed through. I pushed through. I pushed through. I pushed through. There's no option. You don't even think that you can say no or I need help or whatever. It's just not there. And so even though I couldn't, I did it. It's a curse. You know, I'm not saying God curse me, but curse on my family. You can't do it, but you do it anyway. And it makes it worse and worse and worse and worse and worse. There are so many things that I did and went through saying, I can't. And then I would do it. And, well, I guess I could then. I guess I could. And not even feeling puffed up or anything, you just kind of do it. Yet it has its root in pride. We went on a trip once, and we were on a footsteps of Paul. We just kind of did it on our own with another couple. It was the worst trip ever. It was the hardest trip ever, physically, because I was so fatigued, so mentally fogged. It was awful, awful. And I remember waking up, we were in Rome, and I remember waking up and telling Damien, I can't get up, I can't go. I think about that, it makes me want to cry. I can't do it. Now, I'm not saying anything bad. He is not the most sensitive caregiver. He said, well, then just stay in the hotel. Okay. So what did I do? You think I'm going to sit in the hotel? So I got up and I got dressed and I went. And I pushed and I pushed and I pushed. We had a great day. We saw the Colosseum. It was wonderful. We spent time down in the Mamertine prison. We prayed. I mean, it was wonderful. But by the end of the day, when we were waiting for the bus, I'm on the sidewalk, and I almost laid down. I thought, I'm just going to die. I'm just going to die right here. I don't care if I die. Let the bus run me over. I don't care. I'm so tired. I'm so exhausted. And I wasn't saying it with a nice attitude either. So, but I did it. I did it. Very annoying. So even during that time, I had surgery on my foot. Now, if you've ever had surgery on your foot, you know you can't walk. It wasn't the pain. It didn't hurt. But you can't walk. And then the day of the surgery, you're tired. Once again, I'm in my chair, honey, would you make me a cup of tea? Yeah, in a minute. You know, about 30, 40 minutes later, I thought, you know, I'll get up and make my own tea. So, you know, you do it. You don't want to do it, but you do it. So, at the peak of my coma, there was one day that the light went on because I literally could not get out of my chair. Now, I have said, I can't get out of my chair, I can't get out of my chair, I can't get out of my chair. What do? You get out of your chair. But the light went on, and the Lord showed me at that time that I finally knew what it was to physically and mentally not be able to do something. This is the first time in my life that I physically could not do what I wanted to do or mentally get my mind where it was supposed to be. It was, you're weak, completely weak. Laid out, completely humbled. The light went on and I thought, okay, I get it. I get it. So I thought about other people and I thought, okay, this, I finally reached my 10, you know, scale of 1 to 10. I finally reached my 10. Finally. This, it's taken years, and this is what it's taken, and this is disgusting, Lord, that it would have to take this. I just, what a, you know, I was beating myself up in a very good way. You know, you're just repenting and embarrassed, and it just made yourself sick. And I thought, okay, I've reached my 10. But this person, my 10, this person's 10 could be my 3. They reach their 10 when I'm at my 3. Or they reach their 10 when I'm at my 8. But it's their 10. So though I look at them, and they say, I have a headache, I'm going to lay on the couch and I can't go to church. Like, what? I get it. That's their 10. They can't. They can't. And it was that hard because I'm so dense. Okay, I get it. I get that. So they're smarter than I am. Okay, they didn't have the physical strength or the stupid stubbornness to press on. They're smarter. They said, this is my 10, I can't. Okay, that's humbling. It's very humbling. I don't know if you're getting any of this, but it's my story. But it was the beginning of developing a greater understanding that then translates into compassion. Some people are very compassionate by nature, by birth, because their families maybe are. And I would give compassion because I wanted to be like Jesus, but I didn't know compassion. And at that moment, I knew compassion because boy, did I need it. And then you feel horrible for how you've treated people and that whole thing, and you got to go through all that. But then I had another moment of, oh, God, what if I forget this when I start feeling better? That scared me to death. It really did. I don't want to forget this. Keep me out of 10. Because I got to learn this. God knows all things, and he's very loving. And he chose for my coma to go on for several more years before he brought me out of it. And I'm thankful for that because of what I learned. Self-righteousness is another area of pride that I had to learn a deep and life-changing lesson. I've mentioned the Calvary Road a couple of times. Now, I read that book as a brand new Christian within the first year. Yeah, I think it might have just come out at that time. That book exposes pride big time. And, you know, the talk around the church was this book, this book, this book. And many people, they don't want to read the book because they don't want it exposed, which, of course, indicates that you have pride in your life because you don't want to read the book and you can't handle it, whatever. But me, boy, I can handle this book on pride. Let me give me that book. So I read the book, and it stung. It did. It stung. I saw pride, and I saw self-righteousness that I had already developed, and I had only known the Lord a short time. You don't have to have a church background or come from this denomination of a self-righteous people. You don't have to have a background of that being taught or modeled to you. You can do it all by yourself. I did. I can do it all by myself. You begin to form your own set of Christian rules, and it's your gauge now for other people being spiritual or not. And so, you know, you can become very pompous in our rules and our standards, and I did, sadly. And over the years, you know, the Lord's working in my heart, working in my heart. And when you are in a public place of ministry in a church, it's public. People look at you. They know you. They listen to you. They can see it way before you can. It's just awful. You just get so exposed. But you know what? It's good. It's good. I absolutely love to be humbled. It's just right. It's just right. It just feels good. So over the years, the Lord works on all of us with pride and self-righteousness, and he did with me. A number of years ago, I started reading through the Bible here's the part where I would say, I read through the Bible every year because I want you to know that I read through the Bible every year. It's sickening, isn't it? So I read through the Bible in the New Living Translation because, you know, I've read through the Old King James many, 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 many times. So I read through in the New Living. By the time I got to the book of Romans, chapter 14 and 15, you can read it later in the New Living, which is about Christian liberty. And not stumbling your brother and the weaker brother and the eating and all of that kind of a thing. But the way it's written in the New Living was, it just, everything clicked. And it was just like, oh, I'm the weaker brother. I thought I was the stronger one. No, it's you. Your self-righteous little attitude. And then you have your own set of rules, and all those people who are exercising all of their liberties. And then I'm realizing, wait a minute, these aren't even liberties that they're doing. These are my rules that they're breaking. It's just disgusting. It's absolutely disgusting. Then the Lord began to show me one by one those things in my own life and the attitudes and my own rules. And then I read through the Bible again. This time I said, I'm going to read through the Bible like I've never read it before. And I'm going to see if any of my rules are in there. Guess what? They weren't there. They weren't there. You got to try it. They're really, you know, I don't know what your rules are, but my rules, they weren't there. The Lord also started to show me in the correct way my sin of self-righteousness in other people. Because it was disgusting. Every time I saw it, it disgusted me. But I didn't point the finger and look down on them in pride. It was like the Lord saying, do you see how bad that looks? Do you see how bad that looks? Has that ever happened to you where the Lord shows you something from another person or something, and it's like, like Nathan the prophet going to David, thou art the man. You. It's you. I don't know. I don't think I'm the only one that's happening. You're just like, wow. The interesting thing is at the same time that the Lord was kind of working that in my life, he was working it in other people too that I knew. It was very interesting. I kind of reconnected with a couple of friends and then one that I hadn't. We don't talk very much or get together very much. And they're all three. They were separate, you know. Two of them are elsewhere in California. And so when I would sit and talk with them, and you know how you do, you just chit-chat and you kind of reconnect and you talk about what's going on in your life and what the Lord has done and all of that kind of a thing. And in fact, one friend I met at Starbucks over at O'Brien's, and before I could say anything, she just started talking. And I thought, wow, every single thing the Lord had been speaking, crushing me in, exposing my heart, my self-righteousness, and all of that, he's doing it in hers. It's like, I couldn't believe it. And then I said to her, I said, that's exactly what's happening to me. And I talked to this other friend. It's exactly what's going on with her. And then this other friend, exactly what's on. And then, you know, and I just thought, what is it? I mean, it's a great thing. This is a great, what is it, our age? All of a sudden we wised up? I don't know. I don't know what it is. Or is it something the Lord is doing in the body of Christ? I don't know. It's very interesting, but it's a beautiful work. Humility is a beautiful work. I see it in them, and I see it in myself, and I'm not proud about that. I'm just saying glory to the Lord over it. Pride is so ugly, and it's so unloving. It is self-love, but humility is beautiful. It's others-centered. It's unassuming. It's modest. It's meek. It's unpretentious. It's respectful. It is freedom. Freedom. Pride is bondage. There's no peace for proud people. There's no peace for self-righteous people. But there's peace for humble people. It's freedom. Rebuke a humble person, and they'll take it to the Lord. Seriously, take it to the Lord. Rebuke a proud person, they'll defend themselves. Humility says, I am sorry, whether they were at fault or not. I'm sorry. I forgive you. Will you forgive me? I'm sorry. Pride says, you're wrong. You need to say you're sorry first. You need to be right. That's what pride does. Humility doesn't hold a grudge. Pride is resentful. Humility is patient, is kind. It does not envy. It does not boast or talk about themselves. It isn't rude. It doesn't seek for itself. It isn't provoked. It doesn't think evil or the worst of other people. It doesn't rejoice over other people's failings. It has compassion. Humility bears all things. It believes all things. It hopes all things and endures all things. Humility sounds a lot like love. It sounds like the love of 1 Corinthians 13, and it sounds a lot like Jesus, who humbled himself, who, when he was reviled, did not revile. Humility calls things in its life by their proper name of sin, or gossip, or envy, or rebellion, or self-pity, or whatever it might be. Humility walks in the light and is very honest with itself. Humility, again, is teachable. It asks for help. Humility seeks a counselor, seeks a mentor. Humility knows that phrase, which I think is profound, you don't know what you don't know, and you can't know what you don't know. I mean, that really is profound, because you don't know what you don't know. You think you know, but you don't know. You don't even know what you don't know. And you can't. How can you know what you don't know if you don't know it? But humility knows it doesn't know. So humility asks for help. Humility seeks a mentor. C.S. Lewis said, humility is not thinking less of yourself, but thinking of yourself less. And humility is a choice, because God tells us in his 1 Peter, as we read, humble yourselves under the mighty hand of God, that he may exalt you in due time. Humble yourselves, as James said, in the sight of the Lord. He will lift you up. No one can do it for you. Others can humiliate you, but they can't make you humble. And can a humble person really be humiliated? I don't know. I thought about that. I haven't thought deeply about it, but something to think about. Can you? If you're really humble, can you be humiliated? Would you even be embarrassed if you're really humble? I don't know. Humbling ourselves needs to be on a daily, if not hourly, occurrence. Our wills broken to his will. Andrew Murray said, pride must die in you, or nothing of heaven can live in you. One last thing from Calvary Road. The hard, unyielding self, which justifies itself, wants its own way, stands up for its rights, and seeks its own glory, at last bows its head to God's will, admits its wrong, gives up its own way to Jesus, surrenders its rights, and discards its own glory, that the Lord Jesus might have all and be all. Humility is all about God's glory. Pride is about my glory. So there you go. Am I proud? Yeah. Did I get humbled? Yeah. Will I be humbled again? Yes. Over and over and over again. I have asked the Lord and will continue to ask the Lord on a daily basis, and this has been a few years. Show me any area of pride that I don't see, because it blinds. I can be blinded to it. God, show me. Open my eyes. Keep me dependent. Keep me in that place of humility. And I know that's your heart's cry too. And Father, again, this is not a topic that we all want to listen to and hear. It's convicting. It's hard. It's all those things. But oh, you work so much good in our lives. And Lord, you see it all. Nothing is hidden from you. Each one of us has a story. Each one of us has weaknesses, areas of pride in our lives. And I pray that tonight would be the night of that humility is worked in every single heart. And that as we are open and transparent with one another, that you would use that, Father, for your glory. We want you to be glorified. I want you to be glorified in my life, Lord. I don't want the praise of men. I want your favor and to please your heart. So, Lord, would you freshly fill my sisters with your spirit and sift through this message in their hearts and minds, Lord. Teach them and show them. And may you be glorified. In Jesus' name, amen. Let's stand.